welcome you to the first session of the week. I'm Anita Hill, and the session is titled Homophobia, a Spiritual Affliction. I've been at Holden now all of a week plus 2 days, and I'm starting a second round. Some of you were here last week and sat in on sessions that I did primarily out of the ELCA's resource guide called Can We Talk About This? And this guide and cassette tape are both available in the Resource Center, and I would invite you to take a look at this material if you've not had opportunity to do so. The first session we spent time talking about how dialoguing about this particular topic is risky business. And that is true again as we start a new week and have had a turnover of sorts in the village, and there are new folks here who perhaps not talked about this topic before. How many of you are new to this topic or to the sessions with me this time?
Are those two different questions?
Probably. You know, I always ask questions in twos or threes, so just catch me at that as you will and back me up. So some of you are new to this. I think I'll do a little bit of introductory sort of background things about myself and about just the topic of homosexuality. I have for 14 years now been involved openly as a lesbian woman involved in the Lutheran Church, and it's been a challenging place to be. It's been a place of ministry for me, and I felt a call to ministry in this place of education and dialogue about gay and lesbian people in the church. For the past 7 years, I've been a ministry associate at a Lutheran congregation in St. Paul, Minnesota, working with a program called Wingspan, a ministry with and on behalf of gay and lesbian people and their families. The part about "and their families" was a learning for me. As I began there in 83, I expected much more that I would be doing work with gay and lesbian people, and have become increasingly aware of how closed our church is to talking about this topic, and how trapped I think parents and siblings and others within our church feel about talking about the gay person in their family, so that it in effect impacts many more than the 10% of our population that is known to be gay or lesbian people, this topic about homosexuality. Part of the questions that continue to come up have to do with what is homosexuality, what causes it, and where does it come from. So I'm just going to do a brief review about human sexuality and how it is viewed today. If I were to do a quick review through a couple thousand years of history back to biblical times, I think the way in which they viewed sexuality was that there was a big box and everyone fit in that box, and they wouldn't have used this term heterosexuality, because that's a very modern term to us, but they, in terms of behavior, they assumed that everyone was at that place. They did know that there were some whose behavior was outside of that. The seeing people with behaviors outside of that is early on what began to move people into the idea that somehow it was a choice to behave outside of that heterosexual mode, and that it was some sort of sickness or illness. Kind of model goes back that far. At first, it was they tried to explain it away by saying that people who were acting in that fashion were hermaphrodites. The term means that they had the genitalia of both male and female. When that was proven wrong, then they went on to other sorts of ways of choosing. And the choice, sickness, sinfulness motif comes from there. Historically, at that time period in the biblical times, they did not understand sexuality as we do today, that the procreation of a child took both egg and sperm coming together. The notion was that the male sperm contained everything that was needed to produce life and to produce a child, and that women were merely the warming ovens to grow this seed that had been planted, and part of the injunctions against the spilling of seed, of male seed, masturbation, etc., comes from that time period. Moving much farther, much closer to our own time period, we move to a very either-or kind of two-box theory, I would call it, about sexuality. It's still a larger number of people who are heterosexual, but then we began to know that there were some who were homosexual in their orientation. It was about, I think, in 1850s or so, that the term homosexuality and heterosexuality came into being for us, so that we understood that there was something about a person's psychological and social and everything about your makeup that was part of your orientation that they described as heterosexual and homosexual. In the 1940s, a change came into the more modern way of thinking that we have about human sexuality. And in 1948, Alfred Kinsey and associates at Indiana University were doing study about human sexuality. They did a study with 12,000 men, asking those men about their sexual behavior. It was assumed, using this two-box sort of theory, that this group of people was so small they were just going to set it aside and not look at it. The results of that survey, as they came back, posed an entirely different model that is a continuum about sexuality. The questions they were asking had to do with sexual behavior, not about feelings, fantasy, other sorts of meddling. We'll talk about that a little bit. They posed a model from 0 to 6, and at 0 end of the scale is heterosexuality, and would represent someone in terms of sexual behavior who has had exclusively opposite gender sexual activity. At 6 on the scale is someone who has had exclusively same gender homosexual experience in their lifetime. 3 is a bisexual or ambisexual midpoint, in which the person has had equal experiences with the opposite gender and with the same gender. Someone who's at 1 on the scale would be predominantly heterosexual, but would have had some same gender experience. At 5 on the scale are people who are predominantly homosexual, but have had some opposite gender or heterosexual experience, and mirror images on this scale. Now, with this kind of model going into this, you'd expect that there would be a big bunching of people at this end of the scale, but the kind of statistics that came out of it showed pretty much a bell curve kind of scale about sexuality. That there were more people that fell somewhere between 1 and 5 than the exclusives at either end. That's not the way we think conceptually about sexuality generally. So let me do just a brief exercise that some of you went through last week, and that is to ask you to think in terms of this continuum of human sexuality, which number you would choose for yourself about your own sexual behavior. I see some question marks on faces about whether or not that means my whole life, you know, adolescent experiences, hand-holding or trying a kiss with the little girl or boy down the road when I was a child, what fits? And for yourself, think about sexual behavior and pick that. I'm not going to ask anybody to raise any hands or call out any numbers about what your, where you find yourself on the scale. Question?
I just had a question. When Kinsey did this study, did he and his associates, or how did they define experience, same-sex experience?
I think that they defined it in terms of genital experience with another.
Okay.
So, that might. Okay. Thanks for the question. In 1954, they repeated the study with American women. Similar sorts of results came from that. But thinking about sexual behavior, part of what happens, I think, as we begin to talk about gay and lesbian people and the issues and concerns that we face, is that somehow when we think we know something about someone's sexual behavior, at least with gay or lesbian people, we assume that we know everything about who they are. Would any of you here be comfortable if I went back to St. Paul and described you just by this alone, whatever number you've chosen on the scale? No rush of hands about that, nor am I comfortable with that kind of naming about who a person is, because we're much more complex in our makeup about who we are as human beings, and sexual behavior for gay and lesbian people, just as for heterosexual people, is just a part of who we are and does not take up the totality of our being or our time either. Sometimes I say if gay and lesbian people were as sexually active as the myth puts us out to be, we wouldn't be able to hold down jobs and work, do all those sorts of things that it takes to bring on life. Well, think about sexual feelings and fantasy. Those things that you've thought about or perhaps fantasized about, things that have come in your mind that have not been acted out in behavior, are those for you exclusively with people of the opposite gender or exclusively same gender, or somewhere in between. And take note for yourself whether or not it's the same number as before. Then think in terms of your affectionate behaviors. Are the people with whom you show close affectionate behaviors always of the opposite gender, or always the same gender, or are they somewhere between? And affectionate feelings and fantasy. Is it the same number or a different number? There are many facets about who we are as people, and regardless of the groups that I work with, and whether they are predominantly homosexual or heterosexual groups, often the response that I get is that there's movement on this scale as we begin to layer on the different responses in terms of behavior and feeling fantasy level. And you know, I've laid this out just as an example to talk about human sexuality, and that it is a continuum. They're connected. It's not clear cut either or, one or the other, homosexuality or heterosexuality.
I just had a quick question before we erase that.
Sure.
Has anything been done with the Kinsey model since then? I was wondering, especially in light of these last three categories you've added, sexual fantasy and what was the other F? Fantasy and...
Feelings. Just a different way of saying the same thing, actually. The term fantasy is really kind of loaded for some people, so I use the word feeling there.
Affection behavior and affection fantasy. Has anything been done? Has the study been repeated using those other three categories?
Well, yes. In fact, the way therapists begin to do work with people who are sorting out about their sexuality is to work with them in all those different levels, and to ask them about what has it been in their past, what is it in the present for them, and what would they want it to be in the future, so that all of those levels are part of looking at this. And the what do you want it to be in the future kind of question is in part made more difficult because of the homophobia and the kind of response that we have culturally to gay and lesbian people. There was a time that in our country it was assumed that to be gay or lesbian was to be mentally ill, that it was the same thing. And the kind of data that they gathered in about gay and lesbian people were people in mental institutions. They were not working with a population of people that were healthy to start with. So then their assumptions were, because this is where we see gay and lesbian people, they must be people who are ill. In 1973, the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its disease classification. And it was about that time period, I think 1974, in a book called Society and the Healthy Homosexual, Dr. George Weinberg first posed the term homophobia and began to talk about the way in which gay and lesbian people face discrimination, difficulty, being ostracized if they come out about who they are, and posed that the societal response to that in large measure had in part to do how we felt about ourselves. So homophobia, what the term was, home. A phobia, as you know, is a fear, irrational fear. Homo, same, actually means. It's talking about same sex or same gender behaviors. I think that homophobia can be said to be negative attitudes or feelings or actions against gay men or lesbian women. It can also be a fear of one's own same-sex feelings or attractions. It can be an outright fear of gay and lesbian people, sometimes expressed in violent reaction to. How many of you are familiar with the term homophobia? Quite a few are. Sometimes I meet people who've not had any hearing of that term before. How many of you know people who are gay or lesbian? Quite a number of folks here. I want to invite you in small groups for the next 10 minutes or so to talk with each other about what are the experiences you have seen or perhaps taken part in that you would describe as experiences of homophobia. It may be something that was directed at you, whether you are heterosexual or homosexual, it's possible to have had an experience of homophobia at you. Could have been something when you had a close friendship with a same gender person growing up. What messages did you receive from the people around you about how close was all right? Those sorts of things. Or it may have been that you have experienced someone being hurt or seen a queer bashing event or something on that order. Talk for a few moments about your experiences of what homophobia is, and then we'll do some sharing back in the larger group. So we'll take 10 minutes. If you take groups of five, you can take 2 minutes each. So you ask us to divide up, and if you would do that up on the balcony too.
One person in our group shared an experience of someone who had contracted AIDS and how rejected that person had been by the community.
And the person with AIDS was either assumed to be or was someone who was gay?
I suppose, yeah.
Assumed to be?
You had your hand up?
It was not, yeah, they were known to
be. Known to be gay person.
Yeah. Between the time that I was in high school and junior in college, I was going through a period of transition, trying to decide how did I stand on the issue of gay, lesbian rights and church and life in general. I became very close with my aunt, who had always been kind of separated from the family and had gone off at a young age after college, 21, to Minneapolis to become a nightclub singer. And always respected her actions because she did things that were so radically different from what mainstream Lutheran, conservative, rural, agricultural family would say was apropos. And she was always good at it, always good at whatever she did. And so I tried to emulate, or I wished to emulate some of the things she did. And one day I was talking to her, I was right before my sophomore year of college, still a very homophobic young man, and I said, you know, I had suspicions, and I said, when are you going to settle down and marry and have children? And she'd been living with several women for years, and she was very hurt, angry, whatever, and just said to me, I'm a lesbian. And over the next few weeks and months, I spoke with several friends, counselors and whatnot, and they said, you go through a period of the five stages of death, of
grief.
Of grief, yeah. And, you know, then you'll get to the stage four of plea bargaining and you'll decide whether you want to go on into the acceptance stage, and indeed I did. Made my relationship with her that much stronger. And today, and also, you know, the thought of, I loved her so much and I respected her actions so much before she came out to me. And the idea of coming out to a person is such a powerful thing in itself that how could I justifiably not love her now just for this? And so I think it made our relationship that much stronger and that much more fulfilling. And it still is.
Thank you for
that. So I don't know if that really addresses homophobia.
How does it feel to tell that in a group that you have an aunt who is gay?
Pardon?
How does that feel to say that out loud in a group?
No problem.
No problem for you?
No problem at all.
Okay, because sometimes I talk with family members who feel real anxious about telling that. Depending on what the closeness of the family relationship is. Sometimes I think parents are fearful that others are going to blame them. You did something wrong, kind of notion. And that's perhaps why your child is gay, so the fear level might be different there. The one thing that you touched on that I want to lift up is that grief response and the very typical response of anger, denial, you know, going through that whole list of reactions that are typically grief reactions is what happens when people find out that someone close to them is gay. In part because the expectation of who that person is for you has died, in a sense. There is a loss there in a different way. The kind of notion and fear that that person doesn't exist anymore altogether is part of the irrational fear that is homophobia, because they're still the same person you knew, they're still the same person who laughs about the same things with you, who likes to go for walks to Heart Lake or wherever, that whole host of things that made them your friend in the first place still is there, that makes you fearful of, or made them your sister or your family member. Would someone else want to share a story before we move on? Yeah.
I shared this with I was always a very academic little boy, and I was considered to be kind of a sissy, and I got found out what homophobia was real early. And then when it became popular to be gay, somehow I became a wuss. And I grew up and I had a bout with a psychiatric illness, which is now a big black hole in our society. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing what I do today, which is running a jackhammer 8 hours a day. And I came home to my class reunions from high school, and these people ask me what I do now, and I say I run a jackhammer 8 hours a day, and they kind of back off and say, well, we really didn't mean it, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, we weren't being serious. And I kind of had this feeling of, why don't you just dissolve or go away? Mm-hmm. And later, when through my wife I met gay people and became close to them, like, I kind of knew how they felt with a lot of their experiences.
Mm-hmm. I'm touched by you, that the need, the so much the need to prove yourself in terms of what, masculinity, of being able to be macho enough to handle that jackhammer 8 hours a day, what that's done to your intellect, or you see yourself as a intellectual person even from your childhood and yet unable to experience things. It's not often I hear such a powerful story from someone who isn't gay themselves.
I have a question or a comment. I think we're coming on a negative basis. By the way, as soon as we walk in here and you talk about the fact that everybody seems to be against these people.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think this is kind of this discussion we had here,
mm-hmm.
my own personal feeling that somehow the gay population feels they're being picked on right away before they even get started. Mm-hmm. For example, my area, we get a lot of Hispanics coming into our area.
Okay.
Now, I could very well say to myself, well, I'm against Hispanics, and yet I work with them all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I get along real well. But I get the feeling that we're, this whole discussion is based on a negative basis right away before we even start. Now, maybe you can clarify that.
Well, it was intentional to raise the question about what is homophobia. It would be like having a workshop on racism. To say, does that start the conversation negatively or not? Perhaps it does, or to have a conversation about sexism. Another word that has been used to talk about what the same similar sort of thing that homophobia is and where it comes from is heterosexism, which is a notion that it's a societal assumption and norm that the practice of heterosexuality is the only accepted and sanctioned expression of human sexuality. Is not a view that I hold about human sexuality. I hold a broader view about human sexuality. But with that kind of view, there isn't much room left for anyone else to exist. I'm not sure I'm responding to what your question is exactly.
Well, I live in the north of the Bay Area, San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and we have a large congregation, a large group down there, as you know, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And you read about it in the paper, and as if they're trying to, I guess the question is, prove a point. And that probably bothers me as much mm-hmm. as anything else, because my own personal feeling is that I work in the public schools, and I work with all sorts of people,
mm-hmm.
and all sorts of religious backgrounds and cultural background, and everybody's treated the same, my point of view is.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that when I get one group of people who try to, shall we say, well, as I indicated, prove a point or to pick to stand out, it personally it bothers me. Now, of course, I realize I'm white, I'm a male, and I'm a Lutheran. You know, I mean, I'm just kind of one of the group. I'm not one of those, as we say, somebody that has been to be picked on. I've never been picked on in my life, except mm-hmm. that maybe I was a little too tall when I was a kid and a few things like that. But the thing is that my own personal feeling is that when people are trying to somebody say, say, here I am, pay attention to me, that personally is not my way of doing things, but that's just a comment.
Is that what this feels like?
That's an editorial comment, I guess, probably.
Sure, I'm hearing that. I'm just asking, is that what this feels like to you? How would, let me ask you for a moment, how would you pick to talk about this subject?
Well, I don't know. I don't see, that's the thing, that's the reason I came tonight, was just because of the fact that I'm kind of interested in learning a lot of different people's ideas. I'm certainly open to ideas. I think most of us are here.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, tomorrow's session is titled, What Do Gays and Lesbians Want? And I think that would begin to get back to some of the things that you're asking about, whether or not it's a special kind of rights category to be lifted up above, which is sort of what I hear you balking against. Let me invite you back tomorrow to talk about that more at that point. I had titled tonight's session, Homophobia, a Spiritual Affliction, because the way I see what a spiritual affliction is for us is the times when we become separated from God, perhaps from ourselves, from others, certainly separation from family, I've listed up there next to others, and that it places barriers between us within our faith community and within our own families, that where we're unable to talk with each other or embrace one another as fellow Christians, fellow believers in the faith. All of those sorts of things become the difficulty for us. And I think homophobia affects all of us in our culture. If I were to give my own definition at its root, I would say that homophobia in our culture is men fearing the feminine in themselves and women fearing the masculine in themselves. That it is that kind of sex role rigidity with which we approach what is maleness and what is femaleness in our world that has part to do with that. Got other exercises we'll be going through later in the week, looking at the connections between homophobia and sexism around that. But yes, definitions of what are homophobia are much as you described, the fear, repulsion, hatred of gay and lesbian people. I mean, I have experienced as subtle things as people who, sense of touch and power over, that people find out that I'm gay and that I am willing to stand up and talk about that. I have many times been the first person that people have met to be an openly gay or lesbian person and doing adult forums at lots of churches. People who somehow it feels like it's for themselves, they want to make a point of coming and giving me a hug when it's over. What is touch about in the midst of that kind of thing is sometimes in that fashion. Homophobia has to it an external component, I think, for people, and an internal component, for especially for people who are gay or lesbian. That if you fear being gay or lesbian or fear being perceived as that, and you happen to discern yourself to be that, it's a very difficult place to be in. How do you come to some sense of affirmation of yourself from which to be in the world? No fear of same-sex feelings, attractions.
I just want to share a sample, but go ahead through the list.
Oh, I would just have one other that I was going to lift up. Had an experience once I began working in ministry, this ministry called Wingspan, a gay lesbian ministry. Once some publicity went out about that within our Twin Cities area, it was a Friday afternoon at our church, hot in the summer. Myself and Leo Treadway, who's my gay male ministry partner in that setting, were the only two staff there that afternoon. We have other associates that work with the youth, a senior pastor at the church, others, but we happened to be the only ones there on that afternoon. And I was in the main office, and Leo came in rather ashen-faced, tight-lipped, and said to me, there's people out front who are causing trouble. I need you to call the police. And, you know, I sort of panicked. I didn't know quite what to do, but I dialed 911, asked them to come, told them we were having difficulty there, and then I went out to find two men there who were from another denomination, another church, angry because they had read about this particular congregation and what we were doing about gay and lesbian stuff, who began to spew all this vitriolic sort of stuff, and stronger and stronger, and I felt that I was going to be hit. My own reactions were that my heart began to beat so fast my arms went numb and I couldn't really do much. I did succeed in talking this fellow into following me down the steps and out of the church. And we sort of stood on the sidewalk for just a bit, hoping the police would arrive so that we could dispense of them. As we went back inside the church and closed the doors behind us, these two men stood and railed at the top of their voices, saying, you know, how can you turn your back on a brother, blah, blah. He was assuming that I was a gay man, too. He was so upset with the whole situation, he didn't even understand that I was female. you know, how could you turn your back on, you know, how can one man turn his back on another, he said to me as I was walking away from him, kind of stuff. But that kind of experience I have had, that is a real experience, I would say, of somebody's hatred and fear, misunderstanding of who I am, that clearly puts up a barrier that I would name a part of spiritual affliction for us. Dan, you had a...
Well, I was just say, for me as a gay man, most of the a lot of the homophobia I experience is my own internalized homophobia. It's a constant battle not to always modify my behavior by my perceived fears of other people. It's been really interesting for me being at Holden for the 3 months this summer again, because in my living situation in New York, I have many gay and lesbian friends, and I have many non-gay friends as well, but it's an integrated community, and so I feel very comfortable interacting with them. Here at Holden, for the vast majority of the summer, I've been the only openly identified homosexual person, and I've just spent enormous amounts of energy always monitoring my behavior based on what it feels like to be the only person in a group of a community of 400 people who's identified as gay. And homophobia comes across in sometimes a real subtle and sometimes a real blatant ways. But I had just one experience again where it has to do with your thing about separation, where an experience in a session last week where it was a session on communication, interpersonal dynamics. I was feeling really, it was really a fun session. We were building trust, working on all these, in doing these experiential exercises, and I felt great in the group. And then we were processing it afterwards, and one member said, was talking about how it felt, and he said, well, at one point I realized that I was holding hands with the man behind me and had my, you know, and was touching the woman in front of me, but it felt really, I couldn't believe I found myself holding hands with another man. And everybody in the group burst out into laughter. And at that point, all of a sudden I realized I was no longer part of this group. I mean, up until that point I had felt really integrated, really accepted, fine. But at that point, people's laughter in the room triggered the fact that, hey, this group is operating on a whole different set of assumptions than I am. And it was a very alienating experience. That kind of thing happens to me all the time in a place like Holden, or a place where the norm is defined as heterosexual and there's not much room for being gay. And I find, as a result of those kinds of nonstop pressures, that I'm always monitoring my behavior based on the fears of what it would be like to have people find out I'm gay. And so that's an instance where it's, I think, more subtle. There are other ones, like you talked about, where it's very blatant and it's physical violence and things like that. But
and to know that there are experiences, that to hear the reports come in of a gay man who was chased down by a group of teenagers despite his protestation that he could not swim, threw him off a bridge, Bangor, Maine, 1983. A man drowned. In effect, was killed by this queer bashing event, and the teenagers were released to their parents. They were never prosecuted about this either. I mean, to know that that kind of stuff happens. Similar case a year later in Arizona, in which the judge on record said that it was a case of sort of boys will be boys. This is part of coming to manhood in our culture. I don't think they killed their victim in this case, but that sort of thing was excusable in some way, is part of what homophobia is. The other thing is that all of us in the culture are raised to be heterosexual. Nobody looks at particular, picks out the 10% that are going to be gay or lesbian, or perhaps even gives any thought to how do we help those who will be discerning themselves to be gay or lesbian as they grow into their adolescence and adulthood, live with the pressures that are there over them.
I just was going to mention something that I've heard, you know, several times, and in a small group tonight I heard a comment that, well, I'm from the older generation and you're not.
Okay.
I think it's not sometimes so much a division of generations when you overcome a barrier such as homophobia or racism or sexism. I think it really what it boils down to sometimes is just powerful experiences. I mean, I've been very blessed. I've had powerful experiences with my aunt, and in my mind, it was never anything physical, but in my mind, I dated, quote-unquote, dated a woman, and when I went to kiss her goodnight, she said, I think we better talk. 4 hours later, she came up to me and said she was a lesbian. Mm. For 3 months, we were very close and very emotionally intimate together. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had very powerful experiences, and I think that's one thing that separates. It's not so much an older, younger generation, but it's really who has had powerful experiences, who's been blessed with powerful experiences.
Yeah. Thank you. For the last bit here, I have a gay-lesbian world fantasy that I'm going to read for you. Just want to invite you to close your eyes, listen to this for a few moments, and then we'll be doing some processing together about what it was like to hear this, to experience it, what were your feelings like. Imagine that there is a nonviolent coup by militant gay activists tomorrow. This coup is backed by all branches of the military, which have been infiltrated by closeted homosexuals. The rules of life change profoundly. An announcement is made that homosexuality is God's choice of normal sexual behavior. Oblique biblical references are cited to uphold this. TV evangelists rail at the perversity of heterosexuality and they repent their own past sins. In the popular press, homosexuality is associated with the golden age of Greece, the strength and the progress of the Roman Empire, the creativity of the Renaissance. Heterosexuality is associated with selfishness, depravity, with world war. Adolf Hitler is used as an example of heterosexuality taking its ultimate destructive course. History books are rewritten to underscore the contributions of lesbian and gay men. The homosexuality of figures such as Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, and Socrates is highlighted as a reflection of their emotional maturity and their psychological advancement. Contributions of heterosexual historical figures are minimized, and if it is necessary to mention them at all, there is no reference to their heterosexuality or to their marital status. Health textbooks and psychiatric literature are rewritten to reflect the belief that homosexuality is a natural endpoint of healthy development. Heterosexuality is said to be due to an inability to form a trusting relationship with the same-sex parent, leading to feelings of contempt for the self and a need to focus energy on sexual acting out with someone of the opposite sex, with whom true intimacy is impossible. Many gays and lesbians equate heterosexual feelings only with lust and consider these feelings to be sin. People understand that gay relationships are based on mutual understanding and friendship, as well as sexual love, while heterosexuality is associated only with sexual exploitation, often of children, and with rape. Adolescents are placed in same-sex boarding schools to discourage heterosexual tendencies. If mixed-gender friendships appear to take precedence over normal homosexual relationships, these are broken up. Only homosexuals are allowed in the nation's schools as teachers or administrators. Bands of gay teenagers prowl the streets and parks of large cities, preying on heterosexual couples who come there to meet. The beatings are rarely prosecuted, since heterosexual behavior is against the law, and suspected heterosexuals are the subject of job, housing, and financial discrimination. Some hardline psychiatrists and psychologists believe that all heterosexuals are borderline personality disorders, or that they are narcissistic and antisocial. People displaying an ego-dystonic heterosexual tendency are viewed as suffering from a psychiatric disturbance. Teenagers with heterosexual conflicts have a triple suicide risk of homosexual teens. Children are commonly heard on the playgrounds playing games like Stomp the Straights and Bash the Breeders. Civil libertarians attempt to pass legislation making hate crimes against racial minorities and heterosexuals a criminal offense, but this bill is met with ridicule and contempt in the state legislature, where rural gay and lesbian members state that heterosexuals are sinners and should not enjoy special legal protection. An effort is made to dilute the proposed legislation by attaching amendments protecting members of various gay and lesbian political lobby groups, much to the amusement of many legislators. The bill ends up being withdrawn prior to a vote. There is no heterosexual content on billboards or magazines or TV ads or TV shows or on the radio, in records, or in school textbooks. Expressions of gay and lesbian sexuality are rampant. Billboards feature scantily dressed gay men gazing fondly at lumberjacks who sell a variety of products. TV ads show lesbians in high-top tennis shoes, crew cuts, and ear clips, controlling corporate boards, and then cut to these women at home with their girlfriends who use a certain type of shampoo. Radical heterosexual rights groups emerge in a few large cities. Women in these groups insist on adopting a costume featuring high heels and makeup, short skirts. Sometimes these women can successfully negotiate their way in large cities if they are dancing and socializing with male friends, because they might be mistaken for male transvestites. However, if these heterosexual women are discovered, they are ridiculed and beaten or taunted as perverts. Now, I would think for some, the hearing of that particular gay lesbian fantasy feels like a shock to the system. To others, there's bits and pieces of humor as you recognize the things that are turned against you. I find as I read it myself, there is a sense of ill-at-easeness and embarrassment about the reading of it, the hearing of it. In some senses, there's understanding of it. Let me invite you in the next 10 minutes that we have near to our close to discuss with one another what it felt like to hear that. Were there things that you learned in a turn of phrase about perhaps the way in which gay and lesbian people view this world?